You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The two things that are the same about Brayden and Tommy. Mm-hmm. They're loyal and they want to sell drugs.
Last one to the airport buys breakfast. Day one.
This episode is going to be so hard to start.
It's going to be
It's so, funny because every episode, like, I don't know if you've watched everyone since, but
Not every single one, but I've watched a bunch.
Yeah, every time someone will bring you up, like, obviously, like, we've talked and, like, we talk all the time. I'll be like, they'll be like, oh, yeah, Joe, like, just such a great guy. I'm like, oop. Or I'll be like, oh, yeah, Joe. Yeah. Like, something so small, and then we just move on.
That shit is so funny.
It just, like, became a thing, but and I was like, no, I actually love Joe. It's hard now to, like.
But it's you also answer really well about, you've voiced it several times, about the similarities that there are, and ones that I didn't even give enough credit for, and you articulated it, I think, better than I ever could have, about the similarities and the differences between Tommy and Brayden.
Right.
And giving credit to the background of both of you guys. And then also the best thing that I said, that you broke it down simple. It's simple. The two things that are the same about Brayden and Tommy. Mm-hmm. They're loyal and they want to sell drugs.
Right.
Literally.
That's what it is.
And that's simple.
Right.
And we've been doing this for 9 years because of that. Right. That formula has made a 9 year, you know, right. Show and universe.
And to be even more specific, it's like they're like you were or Tommy, the character, was always so loyal to Ghost. Like, to Ghost, like, no matter what, even though you kind of went off and, which Brayden does as well, go off and they do their own things, he rode for Ghost. So that's what people see in the Tariq and Brayden relationship. They're like, oh, Brayden just rides for Tariq no matter what.
That's
so that's what, like, a lot of it is. But it's like, our upbringings are so different. Even Tariq's upbringing is so different than
sure.
Ghost. So it's such... they're such vastly different characters, but there is like, oh, the comic relief. There's the
yes,
loyalty.
And you've got great timing. I think that, but that's a different, there's a similarity and a slight difference between Tommy and Brayden. And I think that's breaking down to the actors is that you're funny, but you're funny like Gary Owen is funny. like you could write a joke and tell a joke.
Yeah.
Me, I'm funny just because of the Tommy character. And I know I started that season one of the Tommy development of the was it's just timing,
right?
It's there's never mm-hmm. like it's never really an affectation to be funny. It's a different presentation
right.
of the funny,
yeah,
that it breaks down the timing. But we have kind of both inherited that part, which is necessary because that reflects life,
right? Yeah, it is really interesting. I love Tom because the Tommy humor and Brayden humor is so vastly different because Brayden's more of like a goof, which is very similar to who I am, and the Tommy.
He's so serious.
Like, right. That's,
but when he has those little comical like parts, it's just like, what the fuck? Like, it catches you so
right. The humor comes from the seriousness of mm-hmm. how you portray Tommy, where like, I'm thinking...
You meet Brayden, you automatically see, like, he's just a funny kid. Like,
right.
you see Tommy, you think, this fucking crazy.
He's too serious.
Right. You know
what
I'm saying?
Like, but there was, like, one of my favorite Brayden jokes is probably on the Tommy-esque cusp when you're saying to your girl... you know, when she's like, babe, I thought we were supposed to meet at the restaurant. You're like, yeah, I always hate when couples break up in public.
Yeah.
What?
That's season one finale.
Oh, yeah.
Season one finale. Yeah, yeah. Because that's, so it's funny because that's the humor that you.
That I like.
Right,
I
enjoy, that you relate to.
And then that kind of, yeah.
Right. That's so interesting because I'm thinking about the scene where specifically you take the car and you run over the guy who disrespected you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was, you were serious, that whole entire scene. But it's one of the funniest scenes in the show. When it's like, easy like, son, and you're just driving the car and you're just serious. I'm like, there's so much humor in the seriousness is what I love.
Yeah, Heather Zulke wrote that episode and she like, she really catered to the Tommy character. And that doesn't always, like, I don't always agree with the humor.
Right.
But it's kind of like I don't have a choice. And you just, so you try to make it the best you can. Like when Tariq calls the Uber for Tommy. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we should have said something like, at least I would have loved, I'm like, you should maybe we could shoot Tariq like laughing.
Right.
Because who, the kids, guys, how much money, from where? And he's not calling an Uber black, like the, he's calling like the Uber friends, pool. And, you know, pre-COVID Uber pool for Uncle Tommy.
It's like, doing him bad. Like,
yeah. Which is, fact. You know, it's funny. I think the actual concept of that is funnier than we gave it credit for, rather than a joke in there.
Yeah, was there anything on the original pod? I love how we didn't even like introduce, we just kind of went right into it. After this question, we'll because I, listen. Listen, you guys know who's here. Like, we don't gotta say too much. We got the goat in here.
We got an Uncle Tommy.
We got the
I call
legend
him Uncle
here.
Joe. Mm. Y'all call him Uncle Tommy, but this is my uncle. Like throughout the years, this really became my uncle. This is Uncle Joe to me. So we got the great Joseph Sikora in the building.
We got Thank Joseph Sikora here. Everyone's been waiting for this episode. I've been waiting for this episode.
They've been going crazy for this episode.
Yeah, this is gonna be the biggest episode. But it's funny because all the past episodes, I've just like made little jokes like, oh yeah, like because obviously everyone has, they've seen social media, and I went, oh yeah, Joe, who? But listen, I've been so excited to have him come on because I just like, I really do love him, and I'm so excited for just this conversation, and you guys just get the behind-the-scenes stuff. So this is what everyone's been waiting for.
Well, this podcast is fire, and it's an honor and a luxury to be with both of you guys who are tremendous actors. I'm honored to be in the same universe as the both of you, and to watch you grow up into, you know, the leader of this show, carrying this show, and it's total pride, man. I
appreciate it.
You keep on keeping, doing big things, Mike.
Couldn't do this without, you know, learning from the OGs, you know, that I was working on, you know, picking up stuff from you guys.
Very generous, set. Very generous.
You know what I'm saying? I had to pick it up, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to the OGs, because they made this all possible.
100%.
OG, don't say it too many times. I'll have to cover up my old neck.
Was there any ever, maybe not jokes, but scenes specifically in Power where you saw and you're like, oh, I don't agree with this. And then it came out and you're like, oh, actually it came out better than I thought, or joke. Like,
well, you know, it's sometimes you have, I think we've all gone through that, your frustrations of like, how is this going to turn out? Right. Wanting to, it's all done out of a place of love and and respect for what we're doing. Right. But I think Shanna Stein said it wonderfully once to me, that was just like, just remember, like, you have a whole crew of people who want this to be great.
Right.
So everybody is striving for the greatness. And primarily, it wasn't for me to agree or disagree, you know, with Courtney creating the show, who's, you know, she's tremendous.
Right.
And a brilliant storyteller and an incredible writer. And then for really when they brought in Gary Lennon in the second season, he's really the creative voice behind the Tommy character in terms
of. Do you mean, sorry to cut you off, second season of Power or second season of Force?
Second season of the Power show.
Okay.
Gary came in as a co-executive producer, and Gary ended up being the co-showrunner of the Power show.
Second season,
At the end of the series. You know, obviously he's running Power Book 4. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful to have him back because Gary's just incredible. So much of Tommy came through the filter of Gary and then through me. But to go back to the development of Tommy, and I've told this story before, it's funny for many reasons, but when everybody was so excited that I, you know, oh, you got this show, this new thing, except my buddy David Schwimmer. And David Schwimmer, he was excited, but he goes,
Friends.
He's,
you know,
yeah.
Schwimmer from Friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he played Ross on Friends, but you know, obviously he's known for his comedy. But I said to him, I said, you know, it's a great character, but it's not a whole lot of humor in this guy. I mean, he's, you know, they're so serious and all these situations. Tommy in the first scene episode, anyways. So I really tried to find those places for humor. Like when Holly comes into Tommy's apartment, I was like, can we put a gun on the table? They're like, yeah, okay. And then so in that, instead of just like, you know, there's a gun on the table, it's like, you know.
Right.
My bad.
You know, yeah. Try to do that. So try to create the humor in the character. And then it kind of made for a fuller character, and then they started writing towards that,
right,
which was great.
That's what they did great with my character, which is kind of why he went on that path of who kind of I am,
yeah,
is because they're so good at picking that stuff out of being like, oh, let's lean into this. That's so interesting. Like, there are so many scenes that, like, people wouldn't even know that you kind of went into set early. He's like, no, I want this kind of humor here. And it's not even written.
Right, right. To try to help develop that. So it is a collaborative process.
Right.
I mean, of course, there's... we all have our part to play. No man is an island, especially not in this arena.
Right.
Yeah, that's a fact. It's right. Like a football team.
Yeah, oh, that's so interesting. So, and it's also the writers don't, because as actors, no matter how you frame it, we're protective of our characters because it's how we're portrayed.
Sure.
So that's a fact. Sometimes if there's something that you think, oh man, I gotta do this or I gotta snitch or I gotta, it's like you're so protective of how you get portrayed that you sometimes lose focus of the story and you're like, oh no, I know this is a group thing. I just gotta let it play out. So
you know how I felt throughout season 1 through 4, bro, doing a bunch of shit. I'm looking at like, why do they got Tariq doing this shit, bro? I'm like, right. Nah, this is not right, man.
what was the number one thing that you were like, damn, I don't want to do this?
So listen, man, it's getting down to the wire on this, man. It's almost the end of the year.
Well, we've been talking about this since
holiday
March.
Season, baby. Yeah, since March.
Since March.
Listen, man, it's down to the wire. Now, look, we're giving away money at the end of the year. But that all depends on how many. Well, it doesn't depend. We're giving the money away regardless. But the amount of money that we're giving away depends on how many signups we get. And it's crunch time. The year is almost done. So I need y'all to speed up these signups because if y'all want to win some money, y'all got to sign up.
Make sure you sign up at moneyline.com. Use the roar tag. The crew has it, okay?
Listen.
We are giving away. Right now, it's at about $15,000. That could change your life, okay?
15 bands. Right now. $15,000 right now. I mean, what? We need what? 4,000, 5,000 more to make it 20K?
20K.
10,000 more to make it 25K?
So it's up to you guys.
It's up to y'all. How much y'all want to win? Y'all got to sign up. It's on y'all. It's not really up to us.
Right. If you sign up, you're automatically put into the drawing to win some money. Now, what are you signing up for if you don't know what Moneyline is? This is better.
You want to save? Moneyline. You want to invest? Moneyline. You want to spend some money? Moneyline.
Right. Every time
anything
you money.
Anytime you money, you Moneyline.
Right.
Come on now. Be smart about it.
We just love Moneyline so much. We really believe in what they do.
And I really look at this as a helpful service. Especially like, you know, young people coming up, our age, you know, even if, you know, people that have a lot of money coming in, or even if you don't have a lot of money coming in, it helps you learn how to manage your stuff. You know, you got to learn how to manage your money at a young age because, you know, things happen and you got to be smart about your money. So I'm telling you, use Moneyline. It's going to give you some tips. It's going to help you. You're going to get rich.
Right.
Come on, baby.
So make sure you go to moneyline.com, download the Moneyline app, and use the roar tag. The crew has it. Every single sign up, a dollar in the jar. We're giving away 20 grand.
Every single sign up. But don't forget to use the tag. Don't forget to use the roar tag. The crew has it. Because if you don't use it, your name won't be added into the drawing list for the money. So use the tag and sign up, baby. Listen, this is Moneyline. This is the only money app you'll ever need. Moneyline, it has literally every tool that you can think of when it comes to money. Moneyline. All
the
you
only
need.
App you'll ever need. Let's do it at the same time.
Moneyline.
The only money app you'll ever need. I almost said only app you'll ever need, but there's Instagram and obviously like WhatsApp when you're talking to someone sketchy. But back to the episode.
Obviously killing ghosts.
Right.
Like just doing that scene was just fucking like that shit was just hard.
You're like everyone's gonna
it was just weird, bro. It was just literally just weird, like a weird feeling. But, like, something I looked at and, like, damn, like, why the hell did Tariq do this was when they was at the funeral and he let Dre know that there was a
That
shit pissed me off, bro. I watched the episode and I'm like, nah, ain't no way you at the funeral and you thinking about saving this nigga's life, bro. Like,
that was a
crazy moment right there. I'm like, nah, I can't believe I'm doing it. It was, honestly, it's a billion things that I'm like, nah, there's no way they got him doing this. But that definitely was like, nah, come on, bro. Like, Dre, like... Trey, bro.
Yeah,
that was crazy though.
All right, so kind of the way that we like to do this is we go from the beginning. So like, what was day one Joseph Sikora gets an email or a phone call of you see the words power? Like what is it?
You know, it was just another audition.
Right.
And when it first came around, I was getting married. So I passed on the original audition for which the character was called Eddie O'Neill at the time.
that was Tommy?
Yeah.
Eddie O'Neill.
Yeah.
Uncle Eddie.
That's hilarious. Uncle Eddie.
Yeah, Tommy. They did it better. Yeah, Tommy Egan is, of course, how
Tommy Egan is a
else?
Fire ass Eddie name, O'Neill. Bro.
But yeah, so it was, and then it came back around because I think that was originally when the idea was possibly of 50 playing the role. And I'm not exactly positive where they were in the process, but once it was Omari, who was going to be the role, it was kind of this whole second round, which was, I believe, almost 2 months later than the first round of auditions came through. And then, yeah, it was five auditions, a total of five auditions to get the role. Yeah, I was the only actor out of New York.
Wow.
Originally.
Wow.
Everybody else was Los Angeles based.
Mm. Right. And you chemistry read with Omari. And mm-hmm. Was it a bunch of other ghosts as well, or it was just Omari?
Just Omari. Was the only one that was cast.
Fine. So what was like some of the first scenes that they had you read? And
they had the one with Angela. That's a great question.
Yeah, I'm curious too.
Why you want to fuck with this girl who's like the Angela character? Why do you want to fuck with this girl? She's gonna fuck everything up. Like she was trouble back then. She's trouble now. Mm-hmm. Don't fuck with this girl. Mm-hmm. Or it was like that whole thing when Tommy and Ghost are riding in the car. It's like, don't do this on Tasha, because Tommy's always had Ghost back, but he's also had Tasha's back
right. In
a lot of ways too. And one of the things, speaking of what was hard for us as characters, to be like, Tommy let it go pretty quick that the Ghost character kind of was a rat to setting up Kanan.
Right.
And he was kind of like, yo, go, like, Kanan, I didn't know that he set you up and went to the police. And then they kind of never really referenced it again. And I was kind of like, it's all right with me. Because it's tough, and maybe that is something that you, I think, unintentionally would forget as a friend, to be like, I don't want to dwell on that. So ultimately, it was a good move. But that was one of the scenes, and then the other scene was right as we get done with the meeting with Lobos, and what we ended up shooting it right by Lincoln Square by the PJ Clark's, whatever hotel that is right there, and I come up and I say, watch your back. And he says, watch your back, Tommy. I say, you too, motherfucker. and then there's the classic story of when O did it at the final reading. He was like, you know, kind of facing me and we're facing off, but he's in front of me. And there's the, you know, I'm trying to audition for these people, and I smacked his nuts. He went down like, you too, motherfucker. Bang. He went down like that, and then I just walked out of the room, and I figured, man, I either got that or I did not get that.
Yeah, that one.
That was a strong choice.
Yeah. I left it all in the room there.
But it was great. It was great, and you know, Omari was generous. Omari's a great actor to act with. I always say I had, you know, between action and cut, you know, it was so much, every time, this was a lot of fun. Always zigging and zagging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's so unpredictable. Like you'll never know what O's gonna go for it. Like in each take, bro. Like, you'll never know. You're gonna know. It's gonna be something different every take, bro.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's gonna have a lot of fun every take.
Yeah. So when you get to set, you start filming the show.
Day one, the first episode scene that we filmed was me, J.R. Ramirez as Julio, and Dominic Colon, who played Anibal. Can you say it, Renee? How do you say the name? Anibal? Remember Anibal from the Taínos?
Oh, Aníbal.
Aníbal. Mm-hmm. So those were the characters, because I obviously don't pronounce it correctly. and we did that. We shot that in Woodside, Queens. That was day one. Day one of filming, yep. Nice. That was nine years ago.
So are you on set and you're like, are you doing scenes? You're like, this is going to be a fucking hit. Or did you not have that feeling until maybe like a couple seasons later? Like, I'm curious how you felt when
an interesting question. I just don't, in terms of hit, because I've been like, you know, we were talking earlier, Gianni, that like I've been doing this for so long.
You've been on every show.
That I was just like, I didn't think about nothing. I thought about showing up, knowing my lines, and making strong choices. Right. That's it. Like, I was like, whether it's a hit or not, that's not up to me.
Right.
50 Cent said it was going to be a hit, so I was like, it's probably going to be a hit.
Yeah. 50 said it must be true.
It's good, you know? I trusted him, and I trusted 50 said it was going to go 7 years, and you know, it was six and a half seasons, about 7 years. So it's like, you know, he kind of had a structure, and he stuck to it, and you know, and he had that infrastructure and made sure that it happened. But it was, I think the season when Michael's like, oh, you know, first four seasons, like, what is Tariq doing, some of this stuff. I never really questioned stuff until I feel like it was further down the road, like past season four or five, six. And then if they had something, I'm just like, I don't know. It seems like we set something different up. Are you sure this is what would happen? That's because I always tried to feel free and incorporative, even if I did, was like, what the hell is going on here exactly?
Right.
Just kind of being more trusting. And like you and I said as well, Gianni, that if I ever had a question, Courtney was able to answer it. So that speaks volumes.
Right.
Every time.
And was there any early on, like, because you get a script and it's I wouldn't say bare bones, but you as the actor, like, you make the choices of what this guy's going to be. Like, if you put anyone else in the Tommy role, it would be vastly different than the way Joseph would do it, regardless if the lines are the same. So was there anything early on that you were like, okay, I want him to be like this, I want him to do this? Was there anything specific that you made? Obviously, you mentioned like the gun joke like a couple seasons later. Was there anything like day one or episode one where you're like, okay, I want to play it like this, or you just kind of rode with how you felt?
I just tried not to question my instincts. I think that you have to go back to the first two episodes, which were directed by Anthony Hemingway.
Go.
Yeah, just what a dynamic and dynamite human being. And the reality is that if Anthony Hemingway did not direct this, I wouldn't be sitting talking with you guys right now. And that's what the difference a great pilot director makes, because really if he had me questioning my choices, I would have been like, oh, shit, am I wrong? I'm messing this up. I'm screwing this up. And he was like, no, that's it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. 100%. That's great. So it really kind of fortified and solidified the choices that I was making. And I'm so grateful to him for empowering me as an actor and giving me the confidence that this was right. This is the character I should have created. I also did a heck of a lot of work before we started that first day.
Right.
Because another thing that David Schwimmer told me was, I love it, and I think it's super wise, is that if you're not the same guy, the same fully actualized character on the first day of set in the first season, whether that show goes one season or 10, if you change at any point, the audience will turn on you, and they won't even know why. So you have to be that guy. Let the writers write the situations. You're responsible for the character.
Right. Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, I never really thought of it like that.
That was deep shit. I like that. That is a fact.
Yeah, so then it happens, and then you start, like, the new scripts are coming in, and is there anything that you're like, really vibing with, and you're like, okay, this season's wrapping up. I know this is where this character is headed. Was there anything, like, a moment or a scene where you're like, this is it, like, I love doing this, or was it not, did you not have that at all, or were you like that from day one?
I show up pretty excited every single
day. That's kind of the way that I am, yeah.
Yeah, I figure. Yeah. You know?
I know, the whole crowd, my guests, is cuts, like, so tell
this
me.
Is great. So, and it really is great, and I feel like I never lost that, and I think that there were times, I think probably by the end and kind of before book four started, and being I always excited, but reminding myself to say my gratitude prayers and just how lucky I am that, I know I do a good job because I stuck with it and I tried to make big choices. They weren't always great, but sometimes they were because they were big. They were extreme. Right. Just reminding myself to remember that I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful. And there are times where I'm sure you're in the same boat, the both of you guys, that I don't want to take this picture maybe, but I'm grateful for my job and this is part of the thing. You know, listen, if I'm having a dinner with my wife, maybe you could wait till I'm done eating.
Right.
But like, 100%. But 99% of the time, I'm just like, yeah, let's take that picture. Let's do that thing. Mm-hmm. So reminding myself of gratitude. And here we are with the second season with Gary Lennon running the show. And it was every bit as amazing as I thought it was going to be. And the nice guys, the good guys can win too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, I'm super excited for season two.
It's good.
Excited.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, I'm super can't wait. Excited.
Season two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny because Chris, everyone who I've talked to since then has been like, yeah, season two is crazy. So we're super excited for that. So actually, it's funny that you say that. So did you start on Broadway or did you start doing TV and film? What was first?
I started in theater.
Right.
It took me many years and many, many plays to get to Broadway. Right. And then my show only ran for like a month, and then we closed down because people weren't going to see it. It was a courtroom drama called The Caine Mutiny Court Martial, but I was a lead in that. So to have that lead on Broadway was really difficult. And you know what? I'm just going to say this, man, because I think that we've been pretty forthright and honest. I got stage fright from that play. I had the director of that play was a very famous director, multiple Tony winner. And during intermission came up to me and was just like, the fuck are you doing with your hands in your pockets? Who told you to do that? I was like, this is intermission. And after intermission, by the way, I basically talk for like a 15-minute monologue. And so this guy's berating me about why I made that decision. And the curtain's about to, and I was just like, what? Nobody told me to do that. I was just trying something,
right?
You know? And he's just like, that's why the show got, didn't get the good reviews that I wanted to get because of decisions like that, because you fucked it up. And I was like, God damn.
Oh my
God. So I went back, and this is honest. I'm gonna just be honest here. I went back behind the flats that were on there, and me and wonderful actor named Zeljko Ivanek was in it, who you guys definitely know and have seen. He's like one of the best actors in the world. And Tim Daly. And I went behind the flats, and I just literally didn't like cry. Like, right. I just like this. And it was just like tears flowing down my face. And it was the first time in my life. I never felt like I could make a mistake on stage.
Right.
Once I was on stage, it was like, wow. It was like, there was something holy and magical about it. And I never questioned the choices. I allowed the spirit to take me and do these things. It was the first time in my life, Gianni, swear, in my life, I could see people in the audience. And I was just like, I'm just faking. I'm just some dude pretending to be some dude. And right. It, like, he almost put out my flame.
So we all know that the best time to prepare for growth is before the opportunity arises, especially for online businesses.
Listen, ShipStation sets you up for growth by directly integrating with every shopping cart and storefront on the internet. So your products are easier to find, easier to manage, and easier to get into your customers' hands. Come on, you know easy is the best.
So one way Mike and I like to avoid the holiday stress is we like to prepare early. We have to make sure that all of our stuff is set up before the holiday shipping season gets wild.
Bro, shipping season during the holiday, bro, is disgusting.
It's get crazy.
Disgusting.
So that, right.
Packages getting lost, all type of shit.
Right.
ShipStation got us covered, though.
They got us covered. So when we're doing our Crew Has It merch, we make sure we use ShipStation. We make sure we get that out early.
Because we want y'all to get your orders on time.
Right.
I know y'all hate waiting for orders.
You don't want to open a package on December 26th? Like,
yeah, bro. I hate waiting for packages. I'd be checking the tracking every day. I'm like, bro, how is this not here?
Right. I'm outside the window looking at the UPS code.
Yeah, bro, we're not doing that. ShipStation got you covered. You don't got to worry about all of that. Now, look, G, we don't got to limit our businesses just to one store.
Oh, right. It links up with everything, right?
Everything, bro.
With Amazon.
Amazon, Shopify.
Etsy. Yep.
Literally everything you could think of. Anything you can buy something online, ShipStation is integrated and they work with. You can literally handle every single one of your products. Anything you got to ship, you could handle it with one dashboard interface.
Oh, that makes it so much easier. Then you can have multiple different things being sold on different platforms.
I'm telling you, and it's all right there in your face. You don't got to go to this account. You don't got to go to this account. You got to go to this account. Everything is on one simple dashboard.
So the reason why I love ShipStation so much is because I know we got a lot of fans of The Crew Has It and, the Power Universe that have their own merch. I get DMs all the time. I'm merch. How do I get you merch? This is the easiest way to ship out your merch if you have a business, if you have a hustle, anything.
Go to ShipStation.com and use the promo code THECREW. Listen, we're giving 60 days free as a trial. You know what I'm saying? So use that code. Come on.
You try it out. Maybe you don't like it, which you won't, but maybe you don't like it. That's it, But I'm telling you, if you try out ShipStation, you're going to love it. It makes your life easier.
It's no way you're not going to like it. I mean, it's making your life easier. It's making your business do better. It's making your customers happier. How could you not like ShipStation? ShipStation.com, use the promo code THECREW, and get to work, baby.
Why don't you make the best gift that you give this holiday season in your pants?
Do your little drummer boy a favor. He used the lawnmower
4.0. No, it's my little drummer boy. You got the big drummer boy. Go on with the ad.
You don't want to have no silent nights in bed, you know what I'm saying? You got to make sure down there is smooth. So this is what we're going to do. You're going to load up.
Manscape night. So listen, I know Mike's usually helping me out and telling me, what's going on with the products, but we know what's good with Manscaped.
Yeah, we already
okay?
know. These are our partners right here. Like, we locked in.
Manscaped been with us since day one. We've tried every one of their products. With their new shower products, they'll make you feel like all anybody wants for Christmas is you, big dog.
Listen, man. So won't you deck the holes from your face to your balls I'm like, well, don't deck them, clean them, and I'll smoothen the holes out from your fish to your balls. You know what I'm saying? It's holiday season. You can't be down there all rough for Christmas. Your lady trying to get some Christmas rumping on, and you're over there looking all weird. You know what I'm saying? Use the Manscaped 4.0, load it up, clean it up, get to business, baby. Get that Christmas going. You know what I'm saying?
So you guys know all about the Platinum Package, right? Mike, tell them about the Platinum Package.
I mean, I feel like that's the best package for this holiday season. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to stay prepared the whole month.
What do they got in there? They got the deodorant.
Got the deodorant. They got the body wash.
Yep.
What else?
The lawnmower 4.0.
Got the lawnmower 4.0.
Get the boxers.
Comes with the boxers. I mean, bro, you got the whole setup. You can't lose with this shit.
And you want to smell fresh from your Santa hat all the way down to your candy cane, baby.
Just make sure the candy cane is down there looking smooth. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm going to advise you to do.
We don't want no Grinch down there, all right? Yeah. Remember that scene where he's got all the when he shaved his face? Anyways, make sure you go to manscaped.com/crew.
20% off and free shipment. Come on, you can't beat that.
Sorry, I tried to think of another Christmas joke. Back to the episode.
And so it wasn't until, that was 2006, and it wasn't until that I remember, we started Power in what, 2013? Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2016, so 3 years into the Power show, that I felt like, oh my God, it's back.
Damn.
It's back, man. I can do it again. Like, I can do it again without questioning my choices. And then I had, you know, I was surrounded by this, you know, really wonderful team of actors and storytellers and people. And I felt, wow, I got it back.
Right.
It came back.
Crazy feeling.
It felt crazy. And then I was just like, I knew what Tommy was. I structured it because it made me relearn the craft.
Right.
Because I was a little, I mean, even though I wasn't successful like you guys were as young men, I was a working actor, right. So I was constantly sharpening that tool, constantly doing theater,
right.
Constantly doing small guest stars, learning how to be my place in there and
challenging yourself,
but always kind of working it. So it wasn't until after I got that stage right, and I did plays right afterwards. I did a play right after Broadway called Fat Pig by Neil DeBute.
I actually did that in acting class. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I played Tom.
Oh yeah.
And I did it in Los Angeles. Ashley Atkinson, who originated the role of the girl in it, was back, and we were together. I didn't leave the stage for John Bernthal was in it with me too.
Oh, I love John Bernthal.
And I didn't leave the stage for 90 minutes. It was one act, just the whole thing. And yes. I don't remember that play because my stage fright was so high. I was, when people would be like, I'm so nervous, I'm going to throw up. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
That doesn't really happen in real life. Oh, yeah. I have no recollection of that. I did a 3.5, almost 4-hour play with two intermissions called The Brothers Karamazov that we adapted for the stage. And I barely remember that. And like, just because my stage fright was so thick and intense.
4 hours is crazy.
Yeah. So it was just, always just challenging myself that television always felt like, this is so much of it, so different than that. But still, I still had the stage fright.
Right.
From doing the power, even doing the Power show. I'd have to hype myself up, get to there. And then it was that season three, it was just like.
So that was a moment.
Yeah. You arrived.
You arrived.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Damn, that's so. Then, so you've always done like the guest stars and you know Broadway, this and that.
My real currings, yeah.
Right, that was kind of what paid the bills up. Right, that you were just trying to pay the bills to get to the next job.
So what was Tommy for season one? For me, I was just like, holy cow, I'm gonna, you know, this and for 8 episodes. Hey man, I can pay off my bills.
Right, yeah. Right. As an actor,
first time in my life.
Right, when you're in that mindset of just being like, oh, I got to get to the next thing. You telling me I'm working for the next 6 months?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sign me up.
Yeah, yeah, sign me up.
So then, when did you kind of feel the shift of what the it eventually became? Obviously, all the shows. When did you feel the shift of maybe I'm picking roles a little more now, or I have money, so I don't need to work until this? Like, when did that start happening? Because that's a shift in an actor's life.
I think it was last year. Being honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. After the first season of Book 4, I felt maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe it's a different kind of brand of that. For example, I actually called 50. I got offered this role with a big director and a cool play. But it was similar enough to Tommy that when I was talking to the director and the producers and wanted, I was like, yo, I got to get like something like this. I want a bald cap. I want like a little mustache. Right, I want this and that. I want to hide within the character. And the guy didn't, they just didn't get it. They're like, no, it's not, but it's not Tommy again. I'm like, yeah, but the fans are going to say that's Tommy Egan. Right. It's too close. I need this, I need enough. Ooh. They just didn't get it. And I gave Fifth a call. And Fifth is like, yeah, nah, that's probably not the one. You know, and so Fifth, let me just give another shout out to the boss. Right. He's been wonderfully accessible. He's the best boss I've ever had. He's incredibly supportive. He knew how much I was getting paid comparatively the first season. And so I was gifted the gift of Rene Castillo to help me.
Which we talked about him on a lot of episodes.
Help me figure out different ways to make money, you know. Right. And part of the becoming, starting our company, starting Black Fox.
Yeah.
Was out of a conversation with 50 when he was just like, you gotta make your own stuff, gotta make your own content. He's like, I'll help you.
Right.
When it's time to help, I'll help.
Yeah.
And he has.
Yeah.
We have a project together right now.
I'll piggyback on that. I saw him in Prague, which I went to Prague with, for people who follow me on Instagram, with Joseph's brother. And we had the time of our lives. We saw 50 two nights in a row. And you go in 50's dressing room and he's literally like, looking at his set list, and you walk in, he's like, no, fuck it. Like, and he just will talk to you for an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't realize who he is. He's just the sweetest guy in the world. And me and Albin are just sitting there having the time of our lives. And I remember, it was weird because I remember looking at 50 and then looking at your brother. And I was just like, nah, like, this is crazy. And it was just, I was in a different world. So that's who you have the company with, Black Fox. It's your brother, Albin. Mm-hmm. And he is one of the greatest people ever. I wanted to shout him out because I really do love him. He's such a sweet guy. So yeah, he's kind of, Talk to me about a lot of the content you guys are doing, and I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, I was I'm like, where are you at? He's like, I'm at the house. Johnny, I'm at the house.
Yeah, Albin comes and chills in the house. He's like, oh, I'm chilling with you. Yeah.
Fire.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Incredibly intelligent, too, and something that I have to do when we're talking with other people in the industry, because, you know, there is such a presentation here that people kind of like, I'm this, and then it's self-described people in the industry oftentimes to pump themselves up. Well, Albin, sometimes I actually have to pump him up, because when we're talking to other production companies, mm-hmm. we're talking to networks or getting to know other writers and people, I have to remind him, like, oh yeah, this is my brother Albin, who speaks Bulgarian fluently and reads and writes Bulgarian and Russian Cyrillic and speaks Russian, and, you know, I'm sure that was helpful when he was over there.
Oh yeah.
And and also, you know, graduated from University of San Francisco, magnum cum laude, and has a degree from Oxford University in philosophy from the College of the Black Friars, and has his master's in foreign economic studies from Corbell Institute. Yeah. And
I was like, Albin, can you talk to that girl for me? Yeah. He's like, bring her over here. Yeah. He just like, go up and talk to her. I'm like,
Perfect. Perfect. So he's just an impressive guy, but he also, at the same time, he used to run a magazine out of New York City called Young Philosopher, mm-hmm. which is in the Studs Terkel style, common man interviews with big philosophical themes. And then he did that. He's made his own short films, produced and directed them. He's worked in the industry. He was worked at ICM for a while. So it's like he's a man of many hats. And so
it's tough to be a brother of someone like that, because they think it's a handout or this and that, and they don't know what actually they
can. Oh, I could never do it without him.
Right.
Impossible. And as you know firsthand, that I have... I'm not as accessible as Albin. I am a little bit more... like a bit more reserved, and that's just because I think that I played, you know, Albin played around in the streets too, but I did a significant amount of playing around in the streets, and so there's a lack of trust in people. And then if you feel like you've been crossed in some way, then that's it. And Albin's like, no, man, that's not the way to be. It's like you gotta keep breathing. You gotta keep breathing. And another thing that I would love to give Gary Lennon credit for, a wonderful quote, is to not judge somebody by their worst mistake.
Right.
So you judge it on, you know, compile these things. You know, somebody does one, oh, no, you did that. I mean, it happens, come on.
Right.
But it have to be pretty bad.
Right.
So, you know, take a breath and you know, keep on keeping on. So he's such a positive, he's true and he's honest. And you, I mean, you're friends with him. He's like right. he's like Chris Lofton.
Right.
He's like
one of the greatest guys.
One of the greatest guys in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a brother like so he could speak about me like Joe just spoke about
I speak about you.
You
kinda
like do.
That is true.
I speak about you like that.
That is true.
is he in Chicago with you when you're shooting book four or no?
He does come to Chicago and he gets put into the bubble and goes through the quarantine and everything like that. And so then he does all of that just to spend enough time with me on set to see where I am. I had the luxury of being a producer on the show last season, which I think could have been a vanity title, but it's a title that I took very seriously.
Right.
And I invested in the correlative storytelling and the arcs and stuff like that. Also knowing my place. Give the director that room. Understand that it's not your place to ever talk to the actors. Understanding what the protocol is.
Right.
Asking questions to the line producer of why this scene is going here or what they have, what's tonally, what is what they want for the scene or the director or the actor and what's done in that way as an education, you know what I mean? And trying to get my own master's in that. And just really lucky and I really loved the ensemble feeling of that more than any kind of power or anything like that. But it's also something that I have been a lead on this show in this series for 9 years.
Yep.
And it's something that I was like, this is what I want. You gotta kind of go after what you want.
Of course. I also want to know if you want to direct one day. But what is the difference? Because obviously when I go back and I watch episode one of Power, it's vastly different than what Book Four is or what, you know, Ghost is or what Raising Kanan is. They all have their own identity. Especially because yours is the only show that's shot not in New York City.
Yep.
So I want to know, like, because it's tonally it's a little different. How, is it feel different being on set? Or, like, what are the differences from day one of Power and then day one of, you know, Book Four?
Wow. That's a really deep and great question.
I'm just curious as, like, a fan of the show.
Is it colder?
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago, yeah.
Right. I could never do that.
My wife, who's from here, literally when I first took her to Chicago, she turned to me at one point and she dead ass said, "Why do people live here?"
Yeah. I said that to him in New York. I'm like,
negative 30. It was like negative 30 wind chill in Chicago. So, yeah, we had this.
That's bad coldness.
We had one scene last in the pilot episode of Book Four, and it was negative 30 wind chill. And I was just like, yo, this is, and I'm dressed like this.
Right.
But I got the Tommy haircut. And I'm like, this is actually dangerous. we can't do this.
Yeah. He was talking about the night where they killed Kanan's character.
Yeah, where we killed Kanan. We was, I think it was in Far Rock. It was like sleet, raining, snowing, breeze and wind. And
you're right off. Yeah, it was the water. So.
Yeah, right by the water, but it was freeze. 50 got so sick after that day.
Yeah, after, I remember that because he was throwing up.
Mm-hmm, after we finished that scene, 50 was sick as hell. Yeah, I was just basically in the car the whole time. He was out doing action, all type of shit. So he was going through it, bro.
Yeah, and actually, even in the first season, we had some. When Tommy kills Vibora.
Don't incriminate yourself now.
Yeah, I know. He's got my back. I gotta give him credit.
Come on.
But truly, when that happened, it was another one of those super, super cold days. We had another, I'm trying to think, there was another one where I had 103 temperature, which is the highest temperature I've ever had in my life. And I still, David Noller, I love you. David Noller's directing, and I think it must have been season two or something when we had these motorcycles and we're doing this thing. I was just like, he's just like, you can stay in the trailer. We'll use your like stunt double for most of it, but I just need you for those close-ups. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, I had such a deep voice during the whole thing. I sounded like Isaac Hayes that I had to do the ADR, to redo it. But yeah, man, dealing with some weather.
Yeah.
But I love that in Book Four that we played the weather for the weather.
Right.
We don't try to hide nothing.
Yes. Right. Which we have to do in Ghost a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be like, what, It'd be like July, bro. It'd be like June, July. We'd be having to wear these big ass coats.
We were both in Montclair. We were in that the coffee shop. It was
That day was hot as hell. Yeah. Oh my god, yeah, that was crazy.
Listen, I could never film in Chicago unless you know Book Four wants the boys there.
It is the universe.
Right. Unless they want a crossover,
and I can tell you, a flight real quick.
I can tell you one thing about season two. Tommy's running out of friends. Yo, Reek, you and your boy.
This is why I like, it's such a cool thing that we've done because there's really no other shows. Maybe The Walking Dead has done a couple spinoffs, which have not been as successful. Great show, but the other ones haven't been as successful. But besides, like, the Marvel Universe, like, who else has done what CK and 50 and what you guys have done? Nobody. So I would love to see more of that crossover. Obviously, Kanan's a little tough because it's back in the day. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see,
I wonder if they'll ever get to the Tommy and Ghost characters and Kanan.
That's what I was thinking.
In Sasha's episode, he said that it was 6 years prior. And it's funny because I am actually really good friends with the kid who played young Tommy.
Oh, yeah?
His name's Ethan.
Ethan. Oh, yeah, because I know him from Shameless. He's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. I'm just really good friends with him. So he's like, oh, I haven't heard anything. And I'm hoping at some point, because I'm curious as a fan of the show, I'm curious to see.
That's honestly just only a good idea. Like,
right.
Only W's coming from that. If they do that, mm-hmm. that's a big W.
I get what Sasha's trying to do. He's trying to solidify the show in its own world first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would love to see that. And I would love to see a little bit more of the crossovers, which potentially we might get coming up. So I'm excited to do that. But there's so much to do in this universe, which I love. If they do like the Influence Loren show, they're also maybe talking about doing one in London. Like, there's so much crossover that could happen that I think creatively is fun for me to think about. Of like, oh wait, so you ended up here, and now it's 6 months later, and they're here in this show. Like, it's just something cool.
Well, even with the Walter Flynn thing on Book Four, I was like, you could do, you know, the Northern Irish type thing. You know, even though he's Scottish of Irish descent, which Tommy Flanagan is in real life, but you could do something like that. You could bring that over. I'd be super down for that.
He'd be incredible. Stars, maybe.
Hey,
tell me about Tommy Flanagan, please. Is he's
the best
from Sons of Anarchy? I'm a massive fan. Yeah, like, did you ever watch that show?
I did, but it wasn't like my show. Right. I check in here and there. I've just been a fan of Tommy Flanagan's Braveheart on. Like, anytime he popped up in something, he was just super present in there.
Polarizing.
He's bigger than life. He's a guy, I always said, Tommy, I love that I never know what's going to come out of your mouth, because I don't think you know what's going to come out of your mouth.
whatever
the mood takes him, wherever the mood takes him, Tommy answers the call of the spirit within. He's a fantastic actor and a really wonderful human being.
Right. But kind of back to what we were talking about before, we kind of went off on a tangent, but did it feel, like, because I know Michael feels this way, did it feel being different, number one, on the call sheet, like, you're the quarterback, you're a producer, did it feel being different on Book Four than it was on Power originally? Like, because I know you and Omari kind of, like, were both the leads of the show, but was it a different feeling being like, this is the Tommy show, this is Joe show? Like,
I it was a little bit different.
Right.
But I feel like just because I've been in the industry for so long, I've seen people who are in that position do really good things, and I've seen people do really crummy things.
Right.
And I was just like, I can do this by being a nice guy having the, you know, the no asshole policy,
right,
which we've really kept. That, and it does trickle down because it allows people to feel safe. And we have a wonderful line producer as well, Richard Lederer. He is fantastic, and he's always about, it's never about getting rid of that person. It's bringing to their knowledge what the situation is, and can we keep you on the team, and can we fix it?
Right. I've always loved that you shout out The Crew, because that's literally the name of our show.
I know. Who has it, baby?
But I love that you do that, because that's the way that me and Michael are. Like, we go to set every morning, like, why go to set and be an asshole when we get to do this for a living? Like, we go to set with smiles on our faces. We're playing music. Good morning, everyone. And
Get money, no good mornings.
Get money, yeah. Michael's right on that.
GM says to get money, no good mornings on our set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good morning, let's get some money.
But yeah,
first.
I've always heard that about you. So, and Michael's the same way. Like, Michael tries to make everyone, you know, have a great day. And I love that about him, because that's who he is. He's a fucking great kid. So I'm curious if it felt any different from Power to...
Yeah, it does. It did. And we hold people to a standard of just being cool. And, you know, there's always little bitty shakeups, but only small. And mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that is overlooked sometimes is really, if this is another 50 Cent thing. Like, right. People, I was lied to once. Many, many times. But one specifically that I remember is
you have to
be loved or feared. And it's better to be feared than loved. And I know that that's Bronx Tale, but it was like it was told to me by somebody else that it's better. And it's not. Because then I see that 50 is actually so loved that people are afraid to let him down.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of the real thing. And I wanted to be, like, you don't want to be loved, but I wanted to make people feel safe enough to feel creative and empowered, mm-hmm. and to bring people up with me.
And so any time, make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. Let them not be afraid to make mistakes. I always wanted people to feel comfortable enough on the set as guest stars to be mm-hmm. like,
right,
yo, this, dude. Hey, man, you're welcome here. You are here for a reason.
Right.
And I think that that's when people see that, and that's trickled down. That's,
even to background.
Oh,
even
man.
Even the background.
Sure.
Because mm-hmm. I did that, and mm-hmm. I know how terrible that can be. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, you want people. I think maybe it stems from maybe that day backstage when that guy said that to you. Maybe it stems from that. You're like, I don't ever want someone to feel like I felt that day.
Oh, yeah.
That is
because we're all making this thing together. Why not make it great? I never understood the competition aspect. Like, as an athlete, I get it, but I never understood, like, we're all on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to make this great thing for these people that they love so much. Like, these people, the fans pour their heart into this. So I never understood, like, the competition. Like, oh, he's got that. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to show up and I love what I do. If I make some money, sure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way that I see it. And I've always heard that about you, which is great.
Yeah, we have a really wonderful, wonderful cast. Manuel Ramirez, Manny Ramirez is just fantastic, who joins the show this season. And Carmela Zambato is fantastic.
Nice. These are new actors? No, these are new actors. Oh, actors. Oh, great. I remember seeing that Deadline article, actually.
We have just really kind of pumped up our...
Nice.
Just the actors are just so... They're having such a great time.
Right. That's always the best.
That's when you make the best work. I mean, you're just having fun on set. The best work, you change these. 100%.
Right. Chris Tardio joins the show this season. And Chris Tardio, it was... The Tommy role was down to me and Chris Tardio.
Back in the day?
Back in the day.
Wow.
Full circle. And now we have Chris Tardio on the show as well in a really interesting role.
That's fire.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
That's crazy.
It's and who knows where it's going to go, you know, but because we're on opposite ends. We're on different teams, me and Chris. Mm. But he's just a wonderful guy. And I actually met him at that audition, and we have remained friends.
Right. There's another kid in the industry that I have that with as well. But it is an interesting thing because it's not really up to you. It's up to the producers.
Yeah.
You both go in and do your thing. You've lived that life.
Who's going to do what
so
you gotta
it's
do.
Up to them, and it's no, you know, whatever happens, happens. So, yeah, that's hilarious. You guys met at that audition and you just...
We met at that audition, but he's a New Yorker, and we had a lot of friends in common, and then we just kind of kept hanging out.
Right,
yeah, that's fire.
That kind of so when I did a movie Ma like 3-4 years ago, and the kid that I tested against, weirdly enough, I went to go to the writer's room of Ghost season one, and I saw him walking by on the lot Sunset. I think it was Sunset Gower at the time mm-hmm. in L.A. Mm-hmm. They're in a new lot now.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, they are.
Yeah.
We went a couple weeks ago, but he walked by, and as I was coming out of the writer's room, and they were just talking about how I'm gonna have a brother. I went right back in. I was like, oh my God. I went right back in and I was like, he's got to be my brother. Like, he's shooting a show right there. Like, this would be great. It didn't work out with scheduling, but they reached out to his people and tried to get him on the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I tried to get him on as my brother, but he's killing it now. He's doing like a bunch of shows and stuff like that. But ask the power questions that we ask everyone.
This is a fire question because everyone has like such cool answers to it. So we always ask everybody that comes by, if you weren't Tommy, who would, like, what's your favorite character? Who would you rather, like, who would you choose to portray? What character?
In the original. Actually, and then let's do the other shows, too.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Ghost.
Yeah. Ghost, right?
Yeah.
If I wasn't Tommy, I'd like to be Ghost. And I believe that 50 originally had that as Ghost was the white guy.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think CK did mention that. Maybe wasn't
I
on the show.
I didn't even know that.
And then Fifth was like, nah, nah, nah. I'm going to change it. It's going to be the... the white guy's gonna be this other guy, and the black guy's gonna be.
That's exactly how he said it to me. He said, nah. Yeah, we're gonna switch. We're gonna switch. That's, I mean, obviously, Ghost, like, that's probably just, it's just so fun playing that character, bro. There's so many different sides.
Oh, he's
Ghost,
such.
Bro. So many
even
different
sides. Even when I rewatch it, and obviously, I love, oh, but what a rotten character.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It would be fun to just indulge in his rot.
Yeah, right? Like, he gets
everything. Self-centered, narcissistic, egotistical. It's fun to be bad.
Right. Yeah, right. Super fun to be bad.
That's why, like, you do have some, you are the hero in your, you know, in the show and in the world. Mm-hmm. But if you were, like, someone on the outside, you're like, that guy is evil. Mm-hmm. But it's just, that's the most, as an actor, like, there's nothing more rewarding than that.
There's nothing more.
As opposed to, like, say, for example, like, Trace, who technically is the good guy.
Mm-hmm. But he's just an asshole.
Who's calling, who's, like, testifying and all this
stuff.
He's
just an
asshole. This is the upstanding citizen, but the fans hate him.
You're not.
Because
he's a bad guy.
Right, he's the villain.
He's the bad guy.
It's so weird how.
Shut the fuck up, Trace.
Right? Bro, Trace, man. That fucking Trace, bro. He's gonna start some problems, bro.
Yeah. Who would you want to be on your show if you weren't, if obviously you weren't Tommy? Is there another character like, oh, that'd be fun there?
I think it's, I mean, it's gotta be, and that's not just because he's my boy, but it would have to be Janard.
I knew he was gonna say Janard.
And Chris does a great job.
I would pick Janard too, honestly. Yeah.
He's just out of control, and he's so.
I love Chris, too, but I love Chris's
Janard because he's so like, I should have got mine. I feel like he ran with that thing and it really worked for him that he didn't get his, like, you know,
right.
He still owed something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The world still owes me. And I think that there's going to be that. And then who knows if he ever gets over that and becomes a little more self-actualized that he'll be this new thing. I'm just excited for the journey of that character for sure. I see a lot of Tommy in that character. Did you guys ever hear the expression that a man lives two lives, and the second one starts when he realizes there is only one?
Oh, that's interesting.
Holy shit!
So, how do you relate
that to
what's going on with Janard's character?
Well, he's kind of just like you know, oh, like I'll get there when I'll get there if this happens, then this. And we got to do this. It's just kind of like you're in it now. This is all you get.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You only get one drop. What is that? It's just you only get one shot.
It kind of reminds me when I think it was when Holly died, and the time Tommy was just like, whatever happens. If I like that's the most dangerous person.
Yeah, and gets beat up by all the
Serbs. Yeah.
That shit was crazy, bro. But like he said though, Tommy's loyal, man. Yeah. She's tried to take Ghost out. She sent a hit without Tommy knowing. Tommy was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That was one where I went back and watched the John Malkovich and the Of Mice and Men. You know when, because his character kills the girl but doesn't.
Right.
You know he's like it's like oh wake up. That's why he was like, that was the fun and really tough improv thing. I love that they kept that in when I said, why are you doing this to me?
Right. Mm.
God. That's a crazy question to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's dead. Why are you doing this to me?
What was your favorite scene that you shot in?
That scene.
That scene?
It was the hardest day of work. And Lucy Walters, who I, you know, love. I love her so much.
We need her on. Please, Lucy, we'd love to have you on.
If you're watching this,
pull up. Oh, she's amazing. She's just dynamite. One of my favorite scene partners of my life.
Yeah, she was only supposed to do a couple episodes, right? And they loved her so much, they kept her in.
She's fire. She was fire. She was fire.
Yeah, you guys worked so well together.
I think she's real close with Courtney still. So, I mean, it's I know that Courtney loved her. And I get it. Why? Because Lucy's dynamite.
She was
just fantastic. And
she
embraced being loved to hate.
Right.
People love to hate that character. And she's like,
when it's like that, you got to embrace it, man. Mm-hmm. You heard it here first.
You did it.
You got to embrace it. Yeah. You got to.
And turned it right on its head.
Yeah, it is what it is, you know? You got to take everything that comes with it.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy what they did. Like, the most hated character on television, now everyone loves him. It's the greatest thing ever.
I don't know how they did it, bro. I truly don't know how they did it, bro. It's
collaboration. They wrote it down. You pulled it off.
Yeah.
Wickedness, bro. But we did it, though. Yeah. I look back all the time. It's like, damn, this is crazy. They used to hate me. Yeah. They used to hate the boy. Now they're waiting for us to come back.
So I want to get into the movie that you have coming out.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm really excited.
I'm just curious, who were your early inspirations growing up? Like, who were some actors that you grew up and you're like, oh, God, I love their work.
This Michael is Shannon. So yeah. Michael Shannon was doing the play Killer Joe at the Next Theater, and I was taking acting classes in a suburb of Chicago called Evanston.
Uh-huh.
Which is not super far from where I grew up. I grew up in the city of Chicago on the far northwest side, primarily in Norwood Park. And but to get there on public transportation, I had to take the what they call now the Blue Line, but we called it the O'Hare Congress, all the way downtown, transfer at Washington Station, jump on what they call now the Red Line, we call the Howard Line, take it all the way to Howard Station, then get on another train to the Suburban Line, the Skokie, either take the, not the Skokie Swift, I would take the Evanston Line and cut off at Noyes Avenue and then get to class. So anyway, it's this little thing here, blah, 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 blah. But the thing was, is I was taking acting classes there, and the other theater was in the same complex in the building. So I saw I saw Killer Joe when I was 14.
Right.
It was a beautiful play by Tracy Letts, that I actually did the West Coast premiere of the same role that I saw Michael Shannon play. The only difference was I was like 30-something, and Michael Shannon was 16 playing a 20-year-old.
Wow.
And it was one of the most magical things I'd ever seen, and I was just like, I was in acting class, so I already wanted to kind of do this stuff.
Right.
But I would just watch him on stage going, two things. I think I can do that, and that's the coolest thing I ever seen in my life.
Right. To be 16 playing a 20-year-old, that's
he was always tall.
That's crazy. That's fire. That's to just carry that, like that 20-year-old presence rather than carrying a 16-year-old presence, like, and keeping it on. And it was on stage, you said?
On
right?
stage, yeah. And it was fire. Mark Nelson was in that's it. Got it was just these wonderful dynamic actors. So that play really changed my life in a lot of ways. That was a huge early influence for me. I also, like, I'm just trying to think, who was I blown away by? Is her name, is it Bernadette, who is on Good Times, who played Thelma? She was so beautiful. I just used to stare at the television and be like, wow, it would be so much fun to be in a scene with her. You know what I mean? Or like something like that. But I watched a lot of television. Mm-hmm. I just thought TV was really cool when I was a kid. It wasn't so much, I mean, I loved movies, but I loved television. And the reason that I wanted to get into acting is when I was 10 years old, there was a show called Kids Incorporated.
I've heard of that. Who was the lead of that?
It was, Fergie was in it. Uh-huh. I can't even remember. It was like tons of kids. But what they did was they played in like a rock band and then they acted out scenes.
Cool.
So I was like, who wouldn't want to do that?
Right.
I want to be an actor. She's like, I don't know. Okay, honey, come back in a month if you still want to be an actor. A month later, I said, I want to be an actor. So she opened up the Yellow Pages, you know, and flipped through the Yellow Pages, acting, nothing, went to theater. Did some auditions, and you know the rest is history. It was
right.
just kind of
Mama Love.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Shout out to Mama.
My mom did a lot.
Right.
Did a lot.
And is she just thrilled? Does she love the show? Does she like?
My parents were really worried about me taking on acting as a career. They're you know, hardworking Polish Americans who are just like, you know, they always thought I'd do something with my hand. I'm not quite as intelligent as my other two brothers, right. although I'm not an idiot. But I think that they always thought I'd be a policeman or a fireman. My neighborhood was very municipal directed.
Right.
There was a lot of city workers, cops and firemen, city workers. So they probably figured I'd go into that. And I had kind of every intention of doing that. But like this thing, I just couldn't stop. When I give talks to my old college, Columbia College Chicago, shout out CCC, I always say, when they say, well, what should I do for an actor? What should I do to be an actor? I said, if there's anything else you want to do, anything else, you should do that.
I say that as well.
Yeah, because it's a tough life. And to think about, I think about it like this. I didn't have two nickels to rub together till I was 38 years old.
Right.
37, 38 years old. I lived my life and at the poverty line or below for most of my adult life. Grew up wonderfully lower middle class. I didn't want for anything. It was very admirable growing up. But I just to be able to have my money as an adult took me all the way into my late 30s with minor successes along the way.
Right.
And tons of near misses. I mean, the roles I was up for, it's a long list.
Yeah.
But didn't get them. But it's a tough life. It's a tough career. You have to have thick skin.
Right.
Yes.
And they only see this.
Have to.
Because like, what guys who are guests, who are, you know, career guest stars are going on these types of shows. So this is the stuff that gets elevated, where they don't know the Joseph Sikora that put in the work for 20 years before he got power.
Yeah.
They don't know the Joseph Sikora that was, you know, Law and Order, Grey's Anatomy, CSI. They don't know that.
Facts.
So they only see kind of, you know, Joe Sikora on the, you know, on the red carpet, you know, Michael in his vlogs. Like, they don't see the stuff before.
That's why you gotta stay patient, stay resilient. That's
great advice, Michael. Keep going with that.
Right.
Yeah, stay patient, stay resilient. That's if you want. I mean, that's in anything in life, but if you want to be an actor in this entertainment business, that's the main thing. Right. Patience and resilience, bro. Like, because if you don't have that, you're going to drive yourself crazy.
There's anything else you can do, do it. Because trust me, it's a long road. Like Charlie Hunnam said this best. I listened to an interview on him. I think it was the Nerdist podcast. I'm a podcast head. I listen to it all. But he said, if you want to be famous, go you make a TikTok, make a sex tape, do whatever it is you want to do to be famous. If you want to be an actor, it's the hardest way to become famous. Stuck with me because he ain't wrong. You know, wanting to be famous isn't going to get you through the being told no, you know, your car being repossessed, you living in an apartment, you're starving, you can't eat. Like, the want for fame isn't going to get you through those. The want to tell story and the love acting, that's what's going to get you.
And you guys even have it a little bit harder than me in terms of your generation, that everybody wants to believe, they have to believe that you're actually that guy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You don't get to get away with, like, I'm an actor. I do this because I'm an actor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And truly believing it, you have an extra layer of burden saying, like, oh, if I'm a rat on TV, if I'm this guy on TV, I'm perceived as having to be that.
Yes.
And that's unfair.
Sucks. I know people, Shane talked about that. People like fucking people go up to Shane in the street. Yeah. Like, you motherfucker. He's like, I'm just doing my job, man.
Right. Just doing my job, man.
Really,
at this
really
point,
well.
When they ask me, they be like, yo, why'd you kill your father? I'd be like, they made me do it.
Right.
They made me do it. I don't even explain it.
Ask Courtney Kemp.
ask Courtney. Yeah. They made me do it. I ain't asked him to make me do that.
Does that happen to you a lot where people want you to just be Tommy? I can imagine because you're an icon in this.
Yeah, you know, and there's the, I always, part of Tommy was always based on guys that I was afraid of growing up. It's not me. It's like, you know, listen, man, I still wouldn't want to be the guy who touches my wife, but it's still, you know, I'm not selling copious amounts of drugs and taking stuff out, like, of course, you bring part of yourself to every character, like you said earlier.
Right.
So you want to have that reality, that based in reality, but you also accept the fact that this is not you. And to play Frank Jr. On Ozark and to play Tommy.
Fire.
They are the exact opposite character, and I have to give love to Jason Bateman because I came in there after the audition for the character thinking I got the role,
right.
So I'm going to play it like this, and Bateman being like, Joe, you know what? Even more like, he's not even there. Like, even worse. Like, this guy's even more of a loser than you want to be. Yeah.
Cool.
He's fantastic.
That shit was so
director.
Fire because I was just watching Ozark, just watching it, and then it was season 3 when you came in, and I was waiting for season 3 for mad long. I was watching, I saw you, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? I was like, wait, that's Uncle Joe. I was like, nah, this is fire. I was like, nah, this is tough. Especially just being that, I didn't even know you were going to be on it. Like, it was no talks about it. We never spoke about it. I just literally was just watching the show that I just was enjoying and watching, and I was just like, wait, hold on, Uncle Joe's in this joint. This is fire.
That's fun.
That was fire.
I loved it, and shout out to Chris Mundy, the showrunner of that.
The show's fire.
He's one of the most incredible writers. He's the nicest guy. There's no duplicity. He doesn't play any games.
Right.
He's not precious with this. He's so forthcoming. Jason Bateman, a wonderful director, obviously great actor, but wonderful director who I was just so grateful that I had I'm coming off of being Tommy from Power, and in a certain aspect, people are puffing you up. Wow, how amazing you're doing, and this and that. And then I get to Ozark, where, listen, there's a lot of content out there. Nobody knew who the hell I was. I mean, nobody knew. Nobody. From casting to nobody. I mean, some of the Teamsters and a couple of the crew people.
Power's a specific world.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's insane. It's a specific world, which I love.
Like, I do love it, too.
Right.
It's like our own little fan club.
Right.
So the Ozark people are just like, you know,
like, what's up?
Who cares? And I'm playing, you know, a recurring guest star. Like, this is their house.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was kind of like, part of my brain was going, no, I auditioned for this, and I think these my roles, and I'm good at, you know, I do my thing, and I'm like, or I can listen to the guy who made this show and who made a hit show, and maybe I can learn something.
Right.
And I'm happy that that part of my ego is still strong enough to be wise enough to be like, let me see how much I can stretch this instrument in a different direction.
Right. Michael always brings up this quote that 50 told him, which I want him to say it again because it's one of the greatest quotes ever.
Don't ever feel too entitled to where you deprive yourself.
Don't ever feel
too entitled to something to where you deprive yourself of other blessings, bro.
Right.
I love that quote. I live by that quote. 50 told me that we were filming season 3, I believe. We was in Red Hook. This is when Kanan and Enrique was just first hanging out, talking about Breeze and those scenes where we were just walking through Red Hook. And we was in this trailer, and they literally called us to set. And this was like 20 minutes, 30 minutes after they called us to set. And we just literally just still talking. Like, we just was chopping it up in this trailer for mad long. And that one quote, that one sentence he said to me, that stuck with me forever, bro. Like, God, I live by that. Live by it.
That's great. Another quote that you love, too, of 50s that I always think about, is that you can't cash an award in at the bank.
Oh, yeah, facts. We were talking about, like, awards and everything. I'm like, yo, Five, it's like, bro, like, they're not seeing us. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's like, listen, we know we do great stuff.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you can't bring these awards to the bank. You can't bring a trophy to the bank. So it's like,
that's a 50 line.
So I'm like, when I read that, I'm like, yo, you really right. Can't cash out no damn. Right. You can't cash out no little awards. So it's like, whatever, man. Like, we do it. We do it for the love as well. But it's just like,
right.
It is what it is.
I received one award, man, and I don't ever need another one. I received the Iconic Actor Award from the Rainbow Push Coalition last year.
Fine. That's awesome.
I was so. Iconic. My parents were part of Operation Breadbasket in 1968 and marched with Dr. King and Reverend Jackson.
Wow.
And we're part of Operation Breadbasket, which became Operation Push and which became the Rainbow Push Coalition. And to have my parents see that award being given to me, here's something that may be controversial, but I'll say it, and we got it for the show. That's kind of interesting, is that when people compare the Tommy character, especially to Eminem, which is an honor. I mean, I take that. It's a big honor.
Have you met him?
Never. But plus, he's from Detroit. You know, we're lake people. People say Midwestern.
Right.
It's not an accurate description.
Right.
Because I have more in common with somebody from Detroit or Cleveland or Buffalo, New York, than I would ever have with somebody like downstate, you know, Illinois, which is fine, or Iowa or Nebraska. Right. It's like, that's Midwestern to me. Anyway, long story short is that Eminem and all these wonderful people who have been accepted by the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy, like, and this is also a 50 Cent quote, is Tommy is different from that in this one way, is that Tommy was created by the culture.
Right.
It's not an acceptance, it's a creation.
Right.
So there is this ownership of the Tommy character of black and brown people.
Right.
It's unique.
Right.
That is a fact.
My brother always, you can't quantify unique. Sometimes people incorrectly say, that's very unique or kind of unique. It's actually, it's either one of a kind or it's not.
Right.
That actually does make sense, though.
Yeah.
Because if it's unique, it can't, like, something can't be more unique than the other.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can never, technically, you can't quantify unique. It can't be more or less than one of a kind. It's either unique or it's not.
Wow, I never thought of it like that.
It actually does make sense, though.
The culture really did create, like, obviously, yeah, like, you had a part in it, and Courtney had a part in it, but the people are really
50 had a part in it, and O had a part in it.
Right.
Michael had a part in it.
Right.
Everybody, we kind of created, us season oneers, we kind of, we all were part of creating that world.
Right.
But it was the culture that created the juggernaut that is
power.
Yeah.
People don't believe that we actually had a scene in season 6. That was the first day I met you.
Oh, yeah, for sure, in your dorm room.
Right,
yes.
But it never made it.
I wish they put that
in. Oh, did it make it in?
No, they never made it. We've never met each other in the universe. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, because I so vividly remember the scene.
Right.
That's a funny-ass scene.
People think that, because I thought so, too, you know, but we have never met technically in power terms.
Ah.
Yet. They've seen.
Yet.
Yet. Yet.
Yeah.
It's only 3 hours away in reality.
Yeah.
Uncle Tommy's only 3 hours away from the boys.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's only like an hour and 40 minutes in the air.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I thought it was like 2 or 3 hours.
No, man. We drive this. My wife is driving. It's 11 hours in the car.
It's 9 if it's in the blue Mustang. So.
Man, that blue Mustang is so fire, bro.
God, yeah.
It's iconic.
I seen him out there sitting on the Mustang waiting for Uncle Tommy.
That's
to come
one of my
out.
Favorite scenes.
Oh, me too.
That's one of my favorite scenes. Many men.
Many men comes on. Nah, that scene, bro. When they put that on, I was watching. I'm like, nah, this is crazy. This is different.
And Michael gets the credit for, there was a line. It was a different line that was in there. Mm-hmm. When he says something, and then it was a different line. I said, "What would I say? You say, I want the smoke.
I want all the smoke. The original line was go for broke.
Yeah.
And then I
asked Michael. I said, Michael, that ain't right. I said, what would I say? You know, like, and Michael said, no, man, you'd say, I want the smoke. I want that smoke. And I was like, then I said, I want all the smoke.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's
so literally me and Michael collaborated on that line, which became really kind of.
We literally sat in the bus, he was talking about it. I was like,
I wouldn't say that, right?
Like, You're like, nah. I was like, nah, he wouldn't say that. So what would you say? I'm like, he wants to smoke. Yeah. And he was like, nah, I want all the smoke.
That's fire. People don't know that sometimes that's how that happens.
Yeah,
right?
Bro. That scene was fire, right. Bro. I love that scene. Oh,
that was great. That scene and was to fire. Get many men, what a gift.
What? Right. I'm telling you, like, for that to be a background song in one of our scenes, that's just legendary, bro.
You dripped out. Yeah.
Dripped out. Got the good fit. Blue Mustang behind me looking all nice.
Iconic. So this new movie that's coming out, when is it coming out? And I want to hear all
about
it.
What's the name? What's everything?
Okay, let me tell you. January 27th it comes out. Fire. And it's starring and T.I. Here's another thing, just in terms of like me and Michael collaborating and making that up. So in the Fear movie that comes out January 27th, and I couldn't be more proud of. So Idel Goldberg, he's such a great actor. He had an idea for the script. So, because we're all trying to avoid our imminent demise in the film, like you want to do in a horror film. Mm-hmm. Idel had this idea. The director ran with it and then changed the entire script because this one actor's idea. And this is actually his idea about how people die, which you'll see in the film.
Right.
It all came from an actor, Idel Goldberg, and changed the entire film.
Wow.
And had all reshoots and everything and changed.
Gotta
the whole,
remember that
this thing
wow.
was one thing and it was one idea that changed the whole film.
That's
so the success of this film could have been because of great casting.
Right. I love when it's collaborative like that and they're like, no, this is my thing. Like, I love that.
Directed by Deon Taylor. And Deon Taylor directed a ton of great films. He directed Fatale.
Nice.
With Michael Ealy and Hilary mm-hmm. Swank. And The Intruder is where I met him. I did that with Megan Good,
yep.
Michael Ealy, and Dennis Quaid. And then Deon has
your girlfriend. Chill out.
You're not wrong. She's elite, bro. She's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life, for sure. And also beautiful heart, wonderful human being, and a friend of 50.
Yeah. Come to the podcast.
Yeah, come through.
Yeah, please.
Chop it up with the boys.
Please, come on. I'm wearing double Baccarat that day.
He's like, please, come on.
But so Deon directed the finale of. Season one of book four and the finale of season two of book four.
Wow, that's cool.
Fire. That's fine.
That's awesome. Who, I'm curious.
Fear.
Side note, who's one of your favorite directors in Power originally? Like, did you have a director where you just like gelled with?
Anthony Hemingway, first one, but also Gary Lennon. So Gary Lennon directed a number of episodes and he's an amazing director. What he did on season five, episode nine is where I kill my father.
Right.
So Teresi goes the way to Dodo.
That damn ghost, man.
That ghost. That's true. You're right. Not alive from ghosts.
Ghost.
And Gary had us do this thing. He goes, do this scene again. And he started this just as an idea of his. Mm-hmm. Do it with no lines. Make it through all the beats of the whole scene. The whole scene.
Right.
The death scene. Going to the hospital with him before I kill him when he wants to say goodbye to his ailing wife.
Right.
All that stuff. He's like, now do it with no lines. And he meshed those up and did. There's a lot of those that made the cut,
right?
Without words.
Wow,
balls.
Yeah. That's actually insane.
Yeah,
balls.
What?
That's fucking awesome.
Balls. Yeah, that's just fire. Balls.
Yeah.
And he was just and trusting your actors. Mm-hmm. Imagine a writer who's just like, no, you know what? I'm trusting you. A writer who's directing, who's trusting his actors more than the writer on the page.
Wow. Different. Yeah. That's awesome.
Wow. He's taking a chance for it.
Yeah.
So is there a little log line of like what it's about or can you kind of not give that away yet?
Oh, 100%. So it's all about fear, truly being fear. So right now we're actually allowing the pandemic to exist, but it's into the future where, you know, we have the strain and then we had the coronavirus B and then we had Omicron and then we have another Omicron variant. Mm-hmm. And so we're putting this just into the future where we're just like, I'm fucking sick of this shit. I'm just fucking tired of it. But it's like how fear as a collective, I said this quote, it's like it's kind of kind of jumps on the Carl Jungian theory of the collective unconscious.
Right.
Which in a nutshell is that we have these experiences as human beings, and somewhere in the collective unconscious of the group of human beings, we have all of this knowledge of the years of together. Just like why are all of these things popping up at the same time in history?
Right.
Without communication, before the internet, before all that stuff. There's something in the collective unconscious in the world that we're picking up on as a species. So there's this, but like maybe one of those things is the fear. And has this pandemic, what has this pandemic done?
Wow.
Is there an idea of fear? And how does that fear manifest itself? And are there ancient evils in the world that are able to be accessed or work their way into us and our minds?
Right.
And then it questions reality. Just like we question reality with the metaverse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
With social media. With all of the information we get on the news, and unfortunately that politics has been a game of just being able to say whatever you want and being able to get away with it, denying the truth, mm-hmm. not looking for the truth. And as actors, I think a lot of times as actors, it gets passed over that we are truth seekers.
Right.
My job is not how this is going to be perceived as an audience, as just as an actor, not as with a producer hat on, but just as an actor, my job is to seek out the truth. Period.
100%. I love that.
And your job is to see how the audience is going to take that, right. or how you askew the truth. But right. my job is to be like, how would Tommy Egan be in real life if he was from here and this is the situation right. he's been put in?
A lot of times people think that acting is, which I've said before, it's lying, it's faking, it's not, and it's actually the complete opposite.
It's
what, the truth of what's happening with the circumstances, what is happening between these two people.
If you are feeling an emotion and you try to show that to people, they're gonna laugh at you.
Right.
Because they'll be like, what the fuck are mm-hmm. you doing?
Right.
But if you're feeling that emotion, I always say sometimes with actors, they're going the wrong direction. This is the right direction.
Right.
You're go in here. Mm. You'll find the truth in here. Out here, you're gonna show people what you think they wanna see. You right. don't know what they wanna see. You can't be in you control of that. My wife always tells me, what people think about you is none of your business.
Right.
And that's just the same thing with acting. Don't try to show people what you think they want to see. Show them the truth, and right. then they'll see whatever they want.
Yeah.
God, whatever they get from it is what they get from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, we could literally have a 5-hour episode with you, but please, we want you to come back
all right.
before book four comes out.
Yes.
We want you to come on, recap
before
episodes.
Fear, before fear, too.
Right. We would, come back we would for love fear. Well, this will come out... Like a couple weeks before couple, Fear
yeah,
comes
yeah,
out,
yeah, yeah.
maybe like a month. So
go see Fear. It's going to be a fantastic movie. Yeah. Stars upon stars upon stars. It's Fine. Great. It's fun. It's
so
great.
Be in theaters. Right. And
it'll be in theaters.
Right.
January 27th, and then we'll also have it being streamed, and you can
Netflix
follow
and everything.
Us.
Incredible.
We'll stick it on there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Go see Fear. But we definitely want to have you back. Like obviously, we could have done a huge long episode, but we want you back. We love you.
Got to save some stuff. We got to keep some stuff in the bag.
I'll do this one to camera. You better watch The Crew Has It or I'm going to cancel Christmas.
Yes! Yeah. Clip that, Dave! Clip that.
Dave over there is rubbing his hands. He's like,
Dave's
yes!
Like, yes.
Fine.
Michael, I want you to close out the episode, but there is, I do want to say something like, everything that happened was just a snowball of misinformation. I respect you so much as an actor, as an artist. I always have since day one that I met you. And we talked in that dorm mm-hmm. Hallway. I just have nothing but admiration for you. When I watched Power, because I hadn't seen any episodes beforehand, because I didn't, you know, if Tommy came in, I would have reacted differently. I would have known too much.
Right.
So I wanted to live in reality of Brayden. When I watched the show, I was like, this is one of the coolest characters. I love the way you played it. I respect your work so much. And I'm glad that we really like had a conversation, because we had a conversation, but we didn't have like, to know who each other were. And I'm glad that that happened. And it's been great getting to know you these past couple months that people really haven't seen. You know, I've been doing the sly comments for fun, but me and Joe really like squashed it. And I kind of got to like know who he was and who I was. And it just really was like a miscommunication of anything. So I want to give you your flowers as someone who built
yes.
this. You know, you're one of the day one people who have built this universe. This podcast wouldn't exist without you. And thank you for everything that you've done for this universe.
I'm honored to be in the same universe as you, Gianni. And Michael, you already know.
You know how it goes.
Yes, sir.
Listen, man, y'all heard it here first, man. They squashed it. I already knew. I just was waiting for them to tell y'all. You know what I'm saying? I already knew what was going on. I'm like, damn, not my uncle, not my bro. I'm like, what's up, bro? What are we doing? But y'all heard it here first. Everything good between them. And listen, man, we just had the legendary Joseph Sikora in the spot with the boys. It's Uncle Joe right here, man. Like, it's gonna be dope. This is dope, bro. This is it. This is it right here, man. The crew has it, baby.
The crew has it, and you have it, baby. Follow Mike Guarini Jr. Where's 22's not back yet?
Nah, not yet. Soon come back. Soon come back. Soon come back. But first, you got to plug everything first.
Yeah.
We plug our stuff. So
Fear, January 27th. Go see Fear in theaters, and then we're going to stream this thing. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter, Joseph Sikora 4, and on Facebook. And man, nice. I tried TikTok. Somebody already has Joseph Sikora 4 on there.
Really?
And, yeah, and I'm just like, let's see what they come
go
up
crazy.
With.
Go crazy, yeah.
He's like, fuck it, do your thing. Yeah. But Michael Rainey Jr. on Instagram, Where's 22 on TikTok. YouTube, Where's 22, go subscribe. More crazy vlogs coming. And yeah, the boys are here, baby.
Gianni V. Paolo, Instagram, TikTok. Also, special shout out. I know I shouted out a couple episodes ago, but a lot of these mass shootings that's happening, it's terrible. I hate it. My dad, he's trying to come up with this platform to help, threat assessment and situations like this to stop these from happening. So SkyPath Security, we're trying to get it in schools.
Provide safety, baby.
Right, everywhere around the world, we're trying to implement this. So check that out. If you know anyone that works in a school, please reach out.
Got to keep the young ones safe, man. They're the future.
Yes. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. We appreciate it. We love you.
Uncle Joe, baby.
My pleasure.
Fear, Joe, Ghost, and Book 4 coming soon, baby.
Everything
we're
about
ready.
To be crazy, man. The universe is going crazy, baby. The crew has it. Yes, woo! Sir.